Welcome to Theology Thursday, an ecumenical space for students to discuss matters of faith and theology.
I'm your host, Connor Grubbs.
And I am your co-host, Ryan Mock.
And I'm your co-co-host, Johnny Grubbs.
And he's here to share heresy with all of you.
Okay. What's wrong, Johnny?
He can't even defend himself. So, here's the deal. Honestly, not much exciting has happened between this right now and last time we sat down to record.
We live very boring lives.
We do. We're just, I don't know, yeah, we're kind of in that part of the fall, at least for me, like, where I'm kind of in a routine and not much has been changing, which is nice. I mean, there's a lot of work that I'm doing starting, and I don't think I've talked too much about this on the podcast, actually, but I'm kind of in the process of starting my own organization with Pinellas Worship Collective, which is basically just a ministry that does worship events and trains people, and we're doing like a school and lessons and all that stuff, and it's a pain. Never ever start anything. If you have a dream, just don't pursue it. I'm just kidding. Actually, you should, and I'm going to encourage you to listen to another podcast called Dream Big by Bob Goff. And he basically like has this framework for taking your dreams and making them a reality, and that's actually been really encouraging to listen to as I've kind of done this.
You should also listen to any of Phil Fisher's talks about dreams.
Yeah, so they're both very whimsical people, and so and usually I don't like that kind of stuff, but they're smart too, so it makes it good. So is there anything you guys have just life update wise before we jump into this sub point?
While I live a busy life, I do live a pretty consistent life.
Right.
So nothing really has changed except I'm just busy.
Yeah.
I would say right now that I'm in the same boat. Like, I've got a very full schedule these days. I've always got something to wake up to, but, like, it's all boxing a little routine, and I'm plugging along.
Yeah.
Slow and steady.
No, that's good. I like kind of having a routine. I haven't had that since college started, and having a work and kind of school flow.
I will say, you know, having this busy schedule, and especially since it's, like, routine, though, it does make the days go by quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's already October.
Yeah, it is. This is our first episode in October.
Happy Spooktober.
We'll have to do something special for Reformation Day.
That's
Johnny's
right,
favorite
happy
holiday
Reformation Day.
Yeah,
hey, I don't ever do that again.
I'm gonna write a song for you guys about Reformation
Day. I think they would prefer that you didn't do that.
Comment below if you want me to write a song about Reformation Day for you.
All right, well,
I'll sing it on the podcast.
And then kind of like halfway through November, we're gonna take a little bit of a break. We're still gonna do a couple special holiday things. Like, we're gonna have an episode that releases on Thanksgiving. Not that you're gonna listen to it, but you know, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday.
You should stuff yourself with turkey.
Yep.
Johnny, you can
stop talking now, but then we're also going to do the live stream of Annabelle's Wish, which is actually the only reason that Johnny is saved, but it's also the reason he has really bad theology. Because he got saved by a cow cartoon.
Theology Thanksgiving.
No, he got saved by Jesus, because that's the only way you can get saved. And this isn't actually the subpoint for tonight, but we should celebrate that Spider-Man is back.
Yes!
Yeah,
I'm still a little blurry on the details.
Here. Well, so here's the thing. Basically, Sony was upset that they couldn't use Tom Holland or Spider-Man in Venom. They wanted to, but they weren't allowed to. And basically, they kind of held him for hostage until Disney came to a sort of agreement where he can exist in both cinematic universes and both franchises. So I don't know exactly how they're going to go about that, but that's essentially the deal they've come to, that Spider-Man can continue showing up in MCU movies as long as the same Spider-Man can jump over and be in Venom and whatever Sony Spider-Man spinoffs they make.
Well, I mean, honestly, that's not such a bad deal. I mean, it could be weird, right, in the other movies, but at the end of the day, you can either choose to love them both or just pick the one world you like to be in.
Right, and I mean, for me, like, so far, Sony hasn't really proven themselves to be great with Spider-Man on their own. Like, the first two Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies are great, but everything after that has been kind of garbage. I sort of enjoyed Venom. I like Tom Hardy, and I think future Venom movies could be a lot better with him still in the role. And maybe with Spider-Man being able to interact, it'll work better. Like, doing a Venom movie without Spider-Man was kind of a weird idea anyway. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yeah. I'm just glad he's back in the MCU, yeah, either way. Because, like, say you try a couple of the Sony movies and they're terrible, just stop watching them and keep enjoying them in the MCU. Right.
I will say, you know, when I heard about the breakup between Sony and Disney over Spider-Man, I got very sad and, like, I lost all desire to continue following the MCU. But now that Spider-Man's back, like, I have hope again.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
Really special. Have you guys seen Dora and the Lost City of Gold?
Okay, we're going to stop talking about movies now, and we're going to transition into our actual sub-point, which is Benny Hinn has claimed to repent from the prosperity gospel.
I heard about this.
Is this kind of like Kanye West claimed that he'll never make secular music again?
Right, so there's a lot of celebrities that are coming out and saying, that's the thing, is like, we could talk about so many of them. Demi Lovato just posted about how she got baptized in Israel.
What?
She was like, she went to Israel and got baptized in the Jordan and was like, you know, she, something on her post about how, like, she's now filled a God-sized hole in her heart. You've watched Justin Bieber and, like, all these people, like, have these, you know, quote-unquote radical transformations, and it's really hard. At the end of the day, it's between them and God. We can't really judge if they're sincere or not. But it definitely seems like, especially with somebody like a Kanye, or, like, that it's for attention.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes. Especially when you watch it. Like, I think one of the main concerns is, like, okay, maybe God is doing something in Kanye's heart. But he's using that Sunday service now. He thinks because he got saved that he can use that to preach. And the Bible specifically says that new believers shouldn't be preachers.
Yeah, that's definitely a danger that we see, like, in celebrity worship, you know, today. Like, celebrity becomes a Christian and suddenly everybody wants them to be, like, the spokesperson for Christianity and be, like, great Christian leaders. But the reality of it is like, if you do have a celebrity that just converts, then you'd want them to be discipled. You know, which so many people lack is discipleship.
Celebrities don't need discipleship.
Right.
That's what Johnny
means. You're right.
I don't really think that. But, I can't help but look at that story like that, like about Kanye or even Benny Hinn, and go, You know, like there's reason for skepticism, right? It's just like, not that it's completely merited, but we just don't know. You know, like, for years, Benny has been preaching this other thing, and for years, Kanye has been like, I'm God. You know, like, and it's like, so what are you saying? You know?
By the way, most people, I imagine most people know who Kanye West is, but not everybody may know who Benny Hinn is.
Right, and that's the one I want to focus on, because that one's more interesting to me, because as opposed to Kanye or Demi Lovato or Justin Bieber, like, Benny Hinn has always claimed to be a Christian. Right. He's a preacher, he's a televangelist, but, like, he's always preached a false gospel.
Yeah, he preaches a prosperity gospel, essentially.
So he's been a televangelist who's, like, been doing stuff for years, and, he, like, sells, you know, weird, like, holy water. He's, like, one of those kind of people.
I have three of his prayer cloths in here right now.
And, you know, and he's always taught this prosperity gospel, that if you believe in God, that you'll have everything you need, and that if you're not rich, then it's because you're being disobedient, and, you know, just everything that comes with the prosperity gospel, which, by the way, is absolute garbage. In fact, one of the promises of the Bible is that in this world you will have many troubles, and we don't really have our grandmas embroidering that and hanging that up on the wall, but it is a promise.
Yeah. he also does, like, healings.
Yeah.
You'll have, like, big revivals. Benny Hinn will be there, and he'll, like,
Bop disabled, you on the head.
Yeah, he'll bop you on the head, and you'll pass out, and then you'll be able to walk again. You know, he does that to, like, disabled people. Obviously,
I should take my knee to him.
It's been proven time and time again that all of that is fake, and he's a fraud. So
here's the interesting part. That I've been doing some research kind of on Benny Hinn's ministry, quote-unquote, and kind of the history of his, what he's taught and what he's done. What's really fascinating, and not a lot of people are talking about this, this isn't the first time that Benny Hinn has claimed to reject the prosperity gospel. It's just the first time he's done it in this modern internet era, where it became like a news story really quick. There have been like three other cases where he said the exact same thing he's saying now, where he's like, I shouldn't have been saying all this.
Was it just, like, for convenience of his current audience at the time?
And that's what it looks like. But whatever it is,
he's repented. When the prosperity gospel doesn't sell.
Yeah. he's repented before. Right. And this this isn't actually the first time. It's just the first time in, like, where we have, you know, where a tweet you know, Twitter is one of the main, you know, vehicles for news nowadays.
Yeah.
We just live in such a different era.
Right.
Even than what it was like 5 years ago. I mean, it's changing so fast. And so it just, news got out. And that's the thing. People think we live in a very, that a lot of the things that are happening are new. But really, it's just that they're getting publicized more and quicker.
We're exposed to it. So, Benny, give us a call, give us a ring, and set the record straight. Who are you?
The only thing I'll mention, I would love to have Benny hit on the
other. That'd be awesome. That'd be hilarious. No, seriously, like, we'll talk to you.
But one of the other things about that is interesting is that, you know, we've talked about before how Francis Chan started spending a lot of time with these prosperity gospel teachers.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were criticizing him for it. So, you know,
Flip side is maybe Francis Chan converted him.
Yeah, maybe.
We don't know. That's why Benny,
but
if you're listening,
Benny is definitely listening to our podcast.
Personally, and it's not my place to judge, but I feel like if you had been teaching something so false and leading so many people astray, rather than doing this big public apology for attention, so you can continue selling stuff and continue doing your you would probably have this humble, you know, posture before the Lord and take a break for a while.
Right.
And realize, wait, I'm not qualified for this. I need to reevaluate some things and work on yourself.
Right.
And that's not something that he's doing. He's not slowing down at all. Mm-hmm. And I think real repentance requires some kind of stepping back from.
Yeah. And I think position. Like the thing like with Kanye, is for now it's too early to tell. And we shouldn't be too quick to judge as well. We should give him time, and you know, we should pray that this conversion be legitimate.
Certainly, I mean, he has a lot of influence, so
It'd be awesome if Kanye actually is a Christian.
I mean, that's the part of me that's kind of cautiously optimistic, say Kanye West and Demi Lovato and all these pop singers were getting saved and it was sincere and they were able to start using their platform for that would be an amazing thing.
Right.
You'd start to see a real shift in, you know, the modern music industry. And is it possible? Absolutely. But it's just, you know, don't believe everything you hear right off the bat, except for Demi Lovato, because she was baptized in the Jordan, so that's definitely
it's definitely legit.
Sorry, yeah. Not sorry.
Yeah.
We're just cynical millennials, and we don't believe anything anymore.
Yeah. I mean, speak for yourself.
Well, I mean, we just said that. We just kind of agreed we're kind of cynical about this.
Hey, so we're going to talk about God now.
Okay.
Theology is actually the study of God, so why not?
Right.
And we are in section number 2 of our systematic theology, which is God. Section 1 was the Bible. Section 2 is God. We talked about the Trinity last week. And now we're going to talk about, we know that he is a triune God. We're going to kind of talk about the nature of God. And we're going to go through, we're going to cover, really, I feel like as I was looking at it, a lot of the stuff we're going to cover today seems very basic. But it's good to verbalize it and put words to it to know what we believe about God. Because if you go out and ask anybody walking on the street, who is God, you're going to get a lot of different answers. And so it's important to look at, what does the Bible have to say about God?
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of set the foundation. I mean, we're just scratching the surface tonight, but we're going to look at some of the names of God and talk about what those mean. And again, there's so many names of God in the Bible. But we're going to look at a few of them, and then we're just going to look at some of the attributes that the Bible talks about God having, and that we see him demonstrating throughout Scripture. So let's start with the names, and these are so fun to say. Elohim is the first one, and Johnny, I know you like listening to the Bible Project. They talk about Elohim a lot on there, because it's one of the most used in the Old Testament.
Yes.
Can you stop rubbing your beard as if you're actually smart? Because you're not. I'm sorry, that was mean.
Wow.
I shouldn't have said that. You're just making goofy faces, and I don't like it.
I'm perceiving what you're saying.
Okay, go ahead. So share about Elohim. What do you know about Elohim?
Well, I know that it is the name for God that is used in the Old Testament. And there is uppercase Elohim, which is like God. There's also lowercase Elohim. So it's actually used in a multitude of different ways.
Yeah. And it usually refers to and emphasizes one characteristic of God, which is that he's all-powerful.
Right. Which is why it's used in Genesis when he's creating the world. It shows that he has power over creation and can just speak things into existence. And it sets him apart from the other deities of the time. If you look at Genesis and the use of the word Elohim and a lot of the way that Genesis 1 is written, it is to be antithetical to the Babylonian texts.
Is, okay, so maybe we know this, maybe you don't, is... Elohim, is that a personal name for God, or is it just a general name for God? Like, we use the word God, and, you know, you could use that name to describe other gods, you know, lowercase g, God. Do we know if that's, like, a personal name for him, or just a general, like, he's God?
I think it's more descriptive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a descriptive term.
It's more of a general, what Johnny's talking about, one of the reasons that its main meaning is all-powerful, like you're saying, different from what, you know, was popular belief about, you know, God during the... Basically, cultures would have a different god for every power.
Right.
And this is saying, no. This god is all-powerful. He's right. Everything in one person.
Right. And even the Hebrews would say, okay, well, like, the Elohim of Dagon or whatever, you know, and right. They would be like, they would refer to... But it was lowercase, and they were just saying the power that they believe in, which is... Even if it was fake, you know, they would talk about other Elohims, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so uppercase Elohim is the one all-powerful God. So to me, if it is a descriptive word, but it can be used to specify the Hebrew God of the Bible when capitalized and so forth.
Nice.
Then there's the name Adonai, which simply means Lord, and there's a Michael W. Smith song about that or something, Praise Adonai.
So that's like more like a title.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, we would say, like, Captain Connor, you know?
Right.
That would be your title if you were a captain, but you're not.
It's something that signifies that he is ruler, that he is Lord, that he's in charge. So, we know that he's all-powerful. We know that he's in charge. He's in control. Another word for that would be sovereign, right? And then this is where we get into personal names, is Yahweh or Jehovah. And those meanings are kind of, they both focus on the eternal nature of God. But those are more personal names, like the same way that the Son is, his name was Jesus, like that was his name, right? So Jehovah is like, that's God's name. And Jehovah often would have something another word added onto it as a sort of addition, another describing word. So like Jehovah Rapha means the Lord that heals, or Jehovah Jireh means the Lord will provide, and there's a number of examples of that. Mm-hmm. But Jehovah is a much more personal name for God,
and Yahweh is also personal, but it's also like more considered by the ancient Hebrews to be his name, like that is right. That is the name of God. And interestingly enough, they wouldn't spell it when they wrote it all the way because it was so sacred to them.
Right.
They would abbreviate it because they just didn't feel like, because that's God's name. That's the name of God.
Right. So one of the things that we should talk about is the moral attributes of God. This is so important to having a biblical worldview, is knowing, okay, if all morals come from God, what are the morals that God himself abides by? What are some of the things we can expect from him?
Well, okay, you rephrase that word. He doesn't abide by morals. Morals flow out of him because he's not held under any standard. The standard, he makes a standard. The standard comes from him.
He does, but he's also unchanging and consistent. So when I say abide by, from a human, a human perspective, like, we know that he will follow certain...
Yes.
You know, moral characteristics that, you know, and these are some of the things that we know from Scripture to be true about him.
Yes. Okay, yes, I agree. I just wanted to clarify that point. He doesn't have, like, he's not underneath a standard.
Right. Which is a good clarifier. So, Johnny, you want to spew some heresy?
You just said, hmm.
No, I think this is a common conversation. I don't know if you just want to have it willy-nilly on the podcast, but, like, is he held under his own standard? That's the question that is often asked by people.
Yeah, the way...
Does he set a standard that he holds himself to because he is God?
The way I would put it is that the standards flow from his being, which, I mean...
Okay. Follows them.
Yeah, and then he does follow them because that's his nature.
Yeah.
But it's not like there is a standard that exists above God that he has to follow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but that's what I want to clarify.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which is good to clarify, but I don't think it's necessarily in and of itself false to say that he abides by certain morals because God would not break a promise or lie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because that would contradict his nature.
Yeah.
Right.
And
yes.
And that's what we're talking about. So, the nature of God.
He's not bowing to any standard that's not already his.
Yeah. Yeah. No, these things are inherently him. This is who God is.
Which
is,
yeah. goes back to the flowing thing. So it's a big circle. Yeah. That's all I wanted to point out.
And we talked about that with the Trinity, that right. God is love, and he has to have the other parts of the Trinity for there to be that.
Yeah.
But some of the other attributes we see are holiness, and we hear that word a lot, but what does that actually mean? Like, what does holy mean?
Oh, it means two things. It means separateness, and it means purity. So yeah. God is separate from us. He's not us.
Right.
And we like to make God in our own image, but that is very much not the case. Many people are guilty of that, and you just need to look to many different religions to see man making God in his own image. But God exists beyond us, and he exists beyond our realm.
Right.
He's separate from us, and he's over all things. And the other aspect is his purity. There's not a speck of sin in him. He's perfect. He's completely perfect.
Right.
And that purity is extremely powerful. I mean, one aspect of holiness that I think is really key for people to understand. I don't know if you've ever seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, but there's a part, spoiler alert, where people's face melts off. You know what I mean? And you think that's like really campy and cinematic and stuff like that. But a Jewish scholar unpacking that Hebrew word for holiness actually explains that, like, it's not that much different than this idea of radiation or something that you can't not touch. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think of the sun. You know, the sun is something that's very, very good. And it's something that we would not be able to live without. But if we were to approach the sun in our current state, we'd be dead.
Yeah. And while that is a very, fictional, kind of adventure story, that definitely came from a Jewish understanding
right.
of
yeah.
who God
it
is.
It reminds me of Moses on Mount Sinai, and he wants to see God, and God's like, you can't see me, but I'll let you have like a little glance on my rear end. And so he hides Moses in a cleft in a rock, and then God passes by in his glory. And just makes it so Moses is able to get a glimpse of just the curtail of like God, and he comes down from the mountain and his face is shining. Like, that's how much effect being in the presence of God has.
And here's why this is important, okay? Especially in the Old Testament, where you're reading it and you go, I don't like the God of the Old Testament. We talk about how a lot of heresies form from that,
right.
How like God was this way in the Old Testament, now he's this way in the New Testament. And it's not true. Jesus grants us access to that holiness where we don't have to fear. It's this kind of idea of like where Isaiah, where the book, anyway, that's a whole thing. But the bottom line is, I always think of this story, and it bothers so many people, where the altar boy who's carrying the Ark of the Covenant accidentally grabs a part of the altar that he's not supposed to touch,
yeah.
or the Ark of the Covenant that he's not supposed to touch, and he just dies on the spot.
Yeah.
And people think, oh, God just killed him for that? And he ended up interacting with the holiness of God in an unholy state, and he died. It was reactionary.
Yeah.
It was.
And to add to that story, the context is the Israelites are bringing the Ark of Covenant back from captivity, and they're actually carrying the Ark wrong. They're supposed to put poles through it. There's like little holes on the Ark to attach poles to. They're supposed to carry it, carrying the poles, but they put it on an ox cart, and the oxen trip, and the Ark of the Covenant falls, and this man, thinking he's doing a good thing, and reaches out to try and hold it up, and doing that, he dies. And R.C. Sproul has a beautiful commentary on this. He's preaching from this message, in this passage, and he says this, and this is really powerful to me, like, the problem that this man had was that he assumed that the dirt of the ground was dirtier than his own soul. right? This man thought that he was doing a service to God by keeping it from touching the dirty ground. But the reality is this man's heart was much dirtier than the ground was. Right. And that's you know, that's who we are before a holy God.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, he's without excuse. What he doesn't have an excuse. Because the reality is, that was the whole point of the whole Levite system is, like, you're not holy enough to be in the presence of God or to touch it. And he should have known that, you know? It's not that God killed him necessarily. It's that he was not fit to stand in the presence of God.
Right. Yes. God, because of his purity, his holiness, God cannot tolerate sin. And that flows into to the other attributes of God, right? On your list. Right.
Which the next one very much has to do with that, and that is his justice. You know, which we're already kind of talking about. If he's holy and we're not, those two things don't go together.
Yeah.
And he's just, and honestly, it doesn't, when you really understand it, it doesn't make the God of the Old Testament as if, you know, quote unquote, as if they're two different people, because they're not.
No.
Somebody to be like hated or appalled at. What it does is it makes what happens in the New Testament when Jesus enters the picture so much more powerful and amazing, and just helps us to really grasp, not that we ever will fully grasp, maybe until we're in heaven, his love for us. You know, so it's pretty incredible. But he is a just God.
Right.
And
so he punishes sin.
Right.
Sin does not go unpunished.
And ultimately Jesus took on that punishment. And we see how that kind of changes in the New Testament. But all throughout, from old to new, from then to now, sin is punished. And justice is had.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people think that's really, like, mean on God's part. You know, why would God, you know, we only do, like, a few bad things. Why would God do that to us? You know, why can't, you know, he just, like, show a little bit of kindness towards us? But, you know, that comes from a failure of understanding our own sin before a holy God. And the fact that we breathe the fact that we breathe at all is just an act of God's grace towards us. You know, God, we don't deserve a single breath.
Right.
But God, in his mercy, you know, he gives us life.
Right. And if God was unjust, he would no longer be good.
Right.
Which is another one of his attributes.
And, you know, that's also a really bad thing for us. You know, apart from God, apart from the work of Jesus, you know, it's not good for us that God is good, because then, you know, we'd burn in hell, which, like, that doesn't make me feel nice and warm, you know, in the metaphorical sense. Maybe in the afterlife, in a very literal sense, it'll be nice and warm for me, but not an enjoyable experience for me, for sure. But, you know, if God is not good, that's really a problem for all of us, because that is a God that is unpredictable. Evil, you know, that's not a God we'd want to worship. A very scary God, you know.
Right. And we know that he is good, and his justice, and his, the fact that he doesn't, that he, by very nature, he can't tolerate sin, is what makes him good. And so we see that, and we see that God is love. That's one of his attributes. And we talked about that last week when we talked about the Trinity, because that definitely plays into that.
Right. Yeah, the Bible makes it very clear. It literally says God is love. So, yeah, there's no mistake in that. And you can see that in his actions, right? The very act of, you know, Jesus dying on the cross is an act of love.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would just reference, too, as we move into the attributes of his love, his goodness, and all those kinds of things, is like, and again, I that's not the point of this episode or even this podcast, is to defend the Old Testament. But looking at Exodus 34, 5 through 7, which one scholar has referred to as the John 3:16 of the Old Testament, this is how God is described, and these are often referred to as the 13 attributes of God. But Yahweh, which are two of them, it said at the beginning, and it says that God, who is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, preserving steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity, transgression, and sin, which are all different aspects of evil, yet by no means clearing the guilty. And what's so interesting about that is justice is not least of them, but it's mentioned last. God's love is set forth first when he's described, even in the Old Testament, and then then it's made clear after it's made clear that he can forgive, that he's not just going to let you get off scot-free.
Right.
That there does require justice.
Yeah. And while it may not be the sole purpose of this podcast to defend the Old Testament, I do think we don't talk about it a lot in a lot of churches and a lot of teaching because it makes us uncomfortable, or we don't understand it, or we don't feel like it applies to us. But I think the whole reason that talking about the nature of God is so important is because it helps us to understand how God is consistent through the entirety of Scripture and till now. Mm-hmm. And forever, because one of his attributes is that he's unchanging. We're not going to get into that just yet, but that is one of his attributes. So, and then that he's true. He is altogether true. Only truth comes from him. And this is something that goes back to one of the episodes we had in the Bible section, talking about canon and the Word of God. And if we really believe God is sovereign, then we can trust that he made sure that his word, you know, was given to us. Do we have a perfect translation in our language? No. But we know that, and we have the tools to go back and look. And we know that his word is true. And then the other is mercy. Which is something that, even though, you know, here we are talking about how a lot of the stories in the Old Testament really bother people because it seems like God's mean or cruel or whatever it might seem like to you. But truthfully, there are so many examples of God showing mercy to the Israelites in the Old Testament. If you read that story through, he was so long-suffering with them.
Right, yeah, right.
The other aspect of that is, like, sometimes we think, like, in his mercy, God just forgets about our sin. But the reality of it is that even in God's mercy, he is still just. In God's mercy, sin is still punished. Right. But it's not us that is bearing the punishment. It's Jesus Christ who's bearing the punishment on the cross. He bore our sin on the cross. And in doing that, he bore the full wrath of God that we deserved. And so God is merciful to us, but he's still punishing sin. Yeah.
And that's exactly where justice and mercy actually coexist in a seeming paradox, but it's not. It's this beautiful thing that God has done for us.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And it really is amazing. And here's the thing. Like I said, we're just scratching the surface. There's so much here. And honestly, we could probably do a whole season just hitting these things one at a time and digging even deeper into them. And maybe someday we will. But a lot of systematic theologies and a lot of the ones that I looked at to kind of model, there's so much that and other sections that we want to get to that we just can't take that much time. But I would love to do a season on the names of God. You literally could stretch it out that long.
Yeah.
Now, we're not going to do that this season. We're hitting it. But we are going to have to make this a two-parter. Everything that we're doing right now is just scratching the surface, giving you the basics, and hopefully encouraging you to study more on your own. So we're going to actually pause here at the moral attributes of God. Next week, we're going to talk about the non-moral attributes of God. Now, there's plenty of more moral attributes, by the way. We didn't hit all of them, and there's plenty more names. We're hitting some of the really important ones to kind of give you a foundation. But then next week, we're going to talk about some of the non-moral attributes.
So this is a cliffhanger.
This is
so they have to come back for the next episode to see how this finishes so they can know more about God.
Absolutely. Well, and then for the next episode after that and every episode after.
That's right. So you have to listen to our podcast if you want to know.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the only way to be discipled. Anyway, this has been interesting conversation, to say the least. There's so much here. And I definitely encourage you. Are there any resources you guys can recommend? I'll go ahead and give mine, The Holiness of God.
Well, you stole mine.
Oh, man.
We can share it.
Okay.
Yeah, The Holiness of God is a really good book. by R.C. Sproul.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, for a lot of people, this book is a book that started a paradigm shift in their own mind about how to think about God. Because we have so many, especially in modern evangelicalism, you know, there's so many misconceptions about God and so many attitudes about God that are just wrong. And one of the beautiful things about this book is, like, it sets people on the right track. Like, yo, get your mind straight about this. You know, God is holy. And we forget that so often. So I'm sorry, I just stole everything you were probably about to say, Connor.
No, that's fine. A.W. Tozer also has lots of books about the nature of God that are really good.
And I'm not a chronological snob. I read a lot of, like, old stuff, too. But if you want to read, since you guys already mentioned some older stuff, although R.C. Sproul's not super old, you have R.C. Sproul, you have A.W. Tozer, and then the more current would be Sky Gitani, which is, he wrote The Divine Commodity. And he basically explains how, he first proposes what God has become in our modern society in terms of an image, right? He's become a commodity which we consume. And then he gets into the attributes of God, many of which we've discussed on this podcast, and explains how God is not a commodity, how he's not just another thing that we consume, but he's actually a person that's living and active in our life, and the all-powerful one who made the universe. So it's a kind of an overview of the things we talked about, but from a perspective of an antithesis to the consumer culture.
Anyway, don't read that last one. It's probably heretical. Johnny recommended it.
Love Sky Tony.
Yeah, I know.
He's got R.C. Sproul could beat him up.
But anyway, we will be back next week, and we can't wait for part two of this episode. Make good choices.
As always, thank you for listening to Theology Thursday. You can find old episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, YouTube, and Podbean. You can send questions that you want us to answer on the show to theologythursdaypodcast@gmail.com, and you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. We hope to have you back next Thursday.